Hey, Brendan.
Hello, Alan.
We made it to another thing podcast. We're
despite
our
the cat's
intro.
Best efforts.
Yes, our intro is cat free at this moment, so it worked out. We had a little not exactly technical difficulties, just noisy animals and things, birds, dogs, and apparently cats also making all sorts of noise this morning. Trying to distract us from our goal, which is what number are we on? 93, right? I think.
I thought we were 94.
Are we? Oh, shoot.
I'm not good at math. Yeah. I don't know. I lost track since you bought a zoo, apparently.
Well,
animal noises.
In any case, we're again on our nice march up to 100. I want to thank our guest Gina last week for being on the show. I thought it was really fun. And this week we have yet another guest. So please a hearty welcome from the Not a Think podcast to Emilio Posse.
That's when you say hi.
Hello.
Oh, good.
I'm still here.
Okay, good.
Hello, John.
94 episodes and professional.
We're doing our best. So Emilio is someone that I've known for quite a while. Way back in the 1900s, we were in college together. And I can't remember, did I meet you in computer science classes first, or did I meet you at the Mustang Daily first?
I honestly don't remember. I think it might have been Mustang Daily. That might have been more of the conversational introduction as opposed to the classroom introduction. I think I saw you in classes, right? But I don't think we actually started talking to each other until we were at Mustang Daily.
Okay. Yeah. Mustang Daily is the newspaper on campus. It was, at the time anyway, it was the California's only student-run daily newspaper that's printed on campus.
And so telegraph service.
So that triumvirate of like, things. There were ones that were student run, but they were printed off campus, and there were ones that were student run and printed on campus, but they weren't daily. So, yay, yeah, Cal Poly.
Yay, Cal Poly. Go Mustangs.
Well, it takes a while to slide those printing blocks around, didn't it? Back in the 1900s?
Back in the 1900s, yeah. I think we were also the only one that had a four-color press on campus.
Oh.
It was a breakdown. I think right down the hall from us, and it was, I think, a donation from Heidelberg.
Hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah, worked out. I'm actually, now that I think about it, what did you do for the Mustang Daily?
I kind of just hung out and talked to the journalists, so I didn't actually do it.
You were a computer science student, right?
I was a computer science student. I was a graphic designer there.
Oh, okay.
So I've always kind of had these two. Well, not always, but I've had these two interests for a long time. And, you know, needed to pay the bills, needed to pay for groceries. And there was a posting in Mustang Daily. You needed ad designers, folks who could operate Quark Express. Remember that?
Oh, my God. Yes.
Yeah, right, right. So this was a very in-demand skill back then. So I joined there as a production designer, actually a graphic designer. Not only was it the only place you could get news every day, you could get ads every day. So, you're welcome.
Oh, now we get ads every second on the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm part of the problem, I guess.
Oh, and ads every second. Oh, this is perfect.
Yeah. So, yeah, I did that for a few years. It was good fun.
Yeah, and I worked there. I ran kind of the website and was sort of IT. I remember at one point. Because I was a part-time employee, so I was capped out at like 20 hours or something like that. But I remember they specifically requested that I be there between the hours of 4 and 5, because that's when they would run the proofs for that day's or the next day's issue. And there was always some kind of strange printing error that would happen, like, when they were shoving everything out onto tabloid, which is 11 by 17. And just by virtue of me being around, it went more smoothly. So they requested I be there between 4 and 5, whether I was really doing anything or not.
That's usually how it happens with the IT person. They just have to be there. Nothing that actually was occurring badly before actually happens for them to witness it.
Right.
Just peace of mind.
Right, right. Yeah, the error dialogues just go away. Everything works nicely. Yeah. Yeah,
I definitely parlayed that quote unquote skill into, you know, enough of a career, at least, you know, so far. So worked out. So Emilio, what is your thing? What are you doing now that you want to tell us about?
Well, when I'm not being interviewed on podcasts, I'm normally doing web design, app design every now and then. So general design of sorts for screens. I work at a marketing agency when I do that. And when I'm not doing that, I'm also playing guitar or cooking. So I keep busy.
Cooking.
Cooking. That tends to be a lot more of a fun topic than the tech design stuff.
Well,
it's something everyone can appreciate.
I think everyone does appreciate design. They just don't know it yet.
99% invisible, I'm told.
Yeah.
Once again, Not a Thing podcast taking a controversial stand. Food is a thing.
So, well, sure. Let's start with cooking. Are you grilling now that it's like officially summer?
Well, it's not officially summer in San Francisco until about October. So, not quite, actually, no. And then there's the whole, you know, yard situation with San Francisco.
Oh, yeah.
The lack of them. So, right. I actually haven't done much grilling. I did more grilling, I think, towards the end of college. I think that was a lot more fun. We actually had space to do that. But now it's all happening inside.
So you have more broiling, baking?
Yeah, more braising, you know, roasting, that kind of stuff, or whatever happens on the stovetop. I guess that would be sautéing and frying and that kind of thing. But I guess with this, I'm not really sure what to think of this weather. It's not cloudy up here, so this kind of weather affords more of a braised, roasted kind of thing, you know, comfort food for the cold.
Mm.
Do you have a go-to recipe that you could recommend to our listeners?
A go-to recipe? Well, soups, I guess, are really good. I'm a big fan of a nice hearty soup on a cold day. But I like to make a celery soup. It's pretty easy to do, especially if you have all that leftover celery that you're not using.
There's always leftover celery.
There's always leftover celery.
You never buy the right amount of celery.
Yeah, I never knew to do that. I took a trip to Copenhagen a couple years ago, and I had fish cakes and celery soup and roasted potatoes, and I had no idea. I'd never had celery soup before, and I asked them what it was, and I couldn't believe you could get all of that out of just celery, pretty much just celery. So found a recipe and figured out what to do with all that leftover celery at home. So now it's kind of a staple thing.
It's either make soup or buy a rabbit.
Or buy a rabbit, yeah.
Those are the only options. Just or I guess you could just go overboard with ants on a log.
So many raisins, so little time. Oh, that's great. Well, okay. I think... I just love cooking. That came up actually today at work because someone had sent an email around work kind of comparing a couple different food delivery services that have been cropping up recently as an I guess as a response to people like wanting better food options at work, but their boss is not wanting them to leave the building, but don't really want to set up like a sushi chef or something. So they partner with companies like, Eat Club and Munchery were the two that I found that people were like going crazy over about food options at work. And there was an email thread, you know, comparing the couple and talking about how nice their mobile interface is. You can order at whenever you want and it shows up. And all I could think of and all I replied was, the weather's really nice now. Just grill too much food, like at dinner, and then bring some in at lunch and you're good.
Yeah. Although I'm a big fan of the getting out of the office.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm a big fan of that. Staying at home for the, you know, the pizza, or staying at work for the pizza cattle feed, kind of not a thing.
No, 100% agree. I mean,
100% not a thing.
Yeah, it's for those like kind of new tech workers that are listening to the show, it's a trap.
It is. It's totally a thing. My friends, there is no such thing as a free lunch or a free dinner or a free breakfast or you know, whatever else they do in this free.
Did you just make that up? That's awesome. I have to keep that one. That one's good.
It is a trap. But I guess, you know, if you're really, you know, dedicated to the 80-hour work week, while you still can be at 21, 22, more power to you.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. I think I was able to get around that for the most part because the first company I worked for especially didn't cater lunch. And so they were in like a business park that had absolutely nothing around. So we were forced to like, leave the place and get food elsewhere. So that worked out. It definitely, kind of put me on the right path, kind of, like at least I think it helped put me on the right path. I still worked way too many hours that first gig.
Yeah. Well, I think people underestimate, especially in creative fields, they underestimate how much the downtime matters. Mm-hmm. So it's not this, you know, this isn't a factory, right? You know, staying longer is not going to produce more. You know, sometimes you just have to break away, and, you know, if you can't make that time, you know, a non-standard break time, lunchtime, just forget about it. Look back at something with fresh eyes there.
So what do you use to kind of unplug if it's not lunchtime, like if it's in like the, you know, you've just gotten to work? Because I know I've gotten into that, especially on like Monday. You get into work and it's like, this is not the time to work.
Well, it's usually a matter of finding a different space, just changing your environment in the office. So, you know, I have the good fortune of, you know, the view of the bay from where I work, and I can change floors, I can change it to a different spot when I really just need to focus on something, some alone time, or even if I'm collaborating with other people, just to change it up so you have a different perspective. And it's kind of weird, but it tends to open up some other ideas that you see something you've been looking at for the last several hours in a different light, literally sometimes. So it certainly helps for me.
Yeah, and at the office where I am, we do have the luxury of it being like the entire floor of a building. So like if you want to follow the sun, you kind of can. You can be on the side of the building when the sun is there, or if you're, you know, if you want to be kind of dark side, I guess, you can do that too.
Dark side of the cube.
Some people dig that. They dig the whole, you know, the dark kind of loungy thing. I'm not a big fan of the fluorescent lights. I do like something a little more natural, I guess. But yeah, I need to get out of the dark zone.
Well, I just spent the last 10 days out in the sun on vacation, and today was my first day back under the fluorescent light. I do not like it.
Yeah.
It's not, I need the real deal.
Right. You get happier, you're more productive. It's a better working environment.
Skylights, that's the way to do it.
Oh, yeah. And anti-glare monitors.
Yes, that is important.
Right.
It's interesting because there's my company also has a building in San Francisco, and it's arguably a really kind of nice building. It's like just off of Mission Bay, and so it's in the up-and-coming area, and it's like it's got a bunch of kind of smaller tech companies around it. The company I work for is kind of a little bit older, so it's a little more enterprise focused. So it's nice to get kind of you know, a little more exuberance and energy. But the major downside is there's no natural light in the building, like, period. There is a skylight. It's built kind of around an atrium, and the atrium has a skylight, but it's filtered, so it doesn't feel right. It's just, you can't tell, you know, what time of day it is if you're not by the windows that face the atrium of the building. And yeah.
Also a trap, Alan.
Yes. it's like a casino, except not as fun.
Surely a healthier addiction, though.
You make a lot more money.
You do. You're guaranteed, I'm told.
I don't know. I did okay the last time I rolled through Vegas, but
yeah, what about the last four times before that?
Yeah, okay, all right. You know, if you take the long lens on that one, it's not as good.
Then yes, working is more, you make more money than you do gambling.
Cool. Well, you, Emilio, you mentioned guitar, so let's go there. Where do we start?
Where do we start? Well, it's...
Where did you start?
Where did I start? I think the first time I heard people play guitar was in church, that kind of thing. It wasn't exactly, I don't know, no offense to the church playing guitar community, but it wasn't something that, it was just kind of there in the background, or even at school, we'd sing along with it. It was a chord instrument, and I think what really switched me on to that, musically in general, was going to a party with a band, and they were doing, it was like R&B covers from the 70s. Earth, Wind, and Fire, and that kind of stuff. And I've never seen a guitar played that well as a lead instrument. And I've heard it plenty on the radio and you know, that kind of stuff, but seeing it is a whole other thing. It was like someone was singing it. And so this is like 96, so it's I just finished first year of college. And about 6 months later, I took the guitar class there in the music department. And pretty much stuck with it all these years. Just certainly not a pro, but yeah, I just stuck with it. Isn't that really the sound? So yeah, I did kind of start down that route, kind of like scales and figure out how to play that kind of music. So I love the music of the scale, stuff to play that style. Did do a band briefly for a few years after college. Doing kind of this mix of rock and funk and a little bit of hip-hop in there. And then as it got harder to do the band thing and just finding ways to just play solo, I got into fingerstyle, so country blues guitar, which is pretty much what I do now. I've been focusing on that for the last 2 or 3 years.
Cool.
So I have about, maybe a nice little set of songs that every now and then I'll get out, the weather's nice, go to a park and just play out there. So That's a lot of fun. It's like, it's very, I don't know if you've ever played, I know you play ukulele. Mm-hmm. I think there's like kind of an equivalent thing to it, but the really neat thing about fingerstyle blues is it sounds like you're playing two guitars. You know, you're having to, sort of what you get with a piano, and you use your left hand to do a lot of the rhythm and the bass and that kind of thing, and you're using your right hand to lead the melody. And you get that same effect on, with the fingerstyle, where your thumb is playing the bass, maintaining the bass, and using the rest of your fingers to drive the song. So it's cool. It sounds really full without having to have the whole band. The realities of setting that up when you've got a day job. So it's nice. It's definitely a good outlet.
Oh yeah, that's great. I mean, the way a ukulele is tuned. I mean, it can be tuned, so you can do that, but a ukulele is normally tuned in reentrant tuning, so the top string is actually an octave higher than it would be.
Yeah.
And so it works really well for strumming, because when you strum up or when you strum down, it ends on a higher note, so it always sounds kind of happy. And that's how why, like, I love playing. I have a ukulele at work, and I just did it today. I just, like, picked it up while I was waiting for Windows to install.
So you have like a full set in there then, right?
Yeah, right. Oh, and I did the updates too, so I had the Encore. But
can you do a cover of Windows starting sound? Because I want to hear that.
Well, it does. The nice thing is that it really breaks it up. At least at my office, there, for whatever reason, people don't really listen to music, or if they do, it's only in headphones. And I think, you know, it's there. That is some, you know, there's a pretty good degree of politeness, but it ends up being very kind of eerily quiet sometimes during the day. And so, when I pick up the ukulele to kind of, you know, play myself through, 5 or 6 Windows updates, it's nice. It's really, really calming. And, you just want like a Mai Tai.
Or a trip to the Tonga room. Yeah, it's funny. I've been so tempted to keep one of my smaller guitars in the office, but it's definitely, it just gets way too much attention. But I guess maybe if I would do it more often, that would be more normal, and I could just do it without it still being a different thing. But yeah, I brought it in for a site launch or two for those late night stays at the office. But yeah, it's fun. It's definitely, it's actually really interesting, because when you bring an instrument like that, you discover other people who are into that as well. Like, I had no idea the guy sitting next to me was really into guitar, really loved to play. And then you find out the guy behind you likes to play piano, and all of a sudden someone, other person sitting next to you likes to sing. It's really, really neat to see this like, different side of people working in a certain way. But for me, it's fun. It's just so different from being on the computer.
Right. Right.
It's just like the cooking thing too. I have a lot of friends whose hobbies kind of revolve around being on the computer. Even photography, which I was into for a little while, so you spend a lot of time on the computer, having to process the image, maybe in a certain way,
sure,
tag them, whatever. It's just nice to have these exercises that are really just very tactile, that I don't see your hand, it's better all out.
Oh yeah, I 100% agree. I mean, that's the that was the whole thing behind, like, so when I affectionately call it my underemployment period, and I was out roughly for a year and a half, and I picked up like all the skills that I picked up during that. I mean, I did try and, you know, teach myself like a little bit of kind of work related things, but everything else that I picked up was completely just sensory in a different way. So I learned how to brew beer. I made my own sourdough starter. I took up this crazy exercise routine that involved a sledgehammer. It was a good time.
Oh yeah, the sledgehammers.
Yeah.
There's got to be a name for that. What do you call that workout?
I was calling it sledging. The article that I'd read about it called it shovel glove, because it, I don't know, actually. I'm not sure why. I didn't ever like that name, so.
The sledge out. How about the sledge out?
Yeah.
That was Alan's version of Eat, Pray, Love. It's like, I brewed beer, I made sourdough, I did some sledgehammer workouts.
It's Alan's renaissance.
Yeah.
I think it certainly worked. I also got ridiculously obsessive about brewing coffee too. So it helps, I think.
Did you grow coffee as well? Did you have the space for the beans and all that?
Not quite. I don't quite have the hilltop with shade and the cloud cover quite yet, but it would be neat to roast my own beans. I've heard of people doing that.
Yep.
And
I have a friend that does that. She roasts her own beans. I should put you in touch if you're interested.
Yeah, that might be good. I mean, just one more thing to go down that like kind of obsessive trail for. It'd be great. And so that's something that I've noticed. I mean, you mentioned like cooking and guitar. Are you the kind of person that's like me, where you like learn about something and then it's like a depth first kind of, I have to figure out everything about this before I like let go of it?
Maybe not everything, but I'll definitely dive deep. My wife likes to say I have these kits, you know, I have this menu, really a recipe, and I just repeat it over and over.
Right.
And you know, it's just the way I learned. I want to make sure that I did it right. It wasn't new, something like that. But yeah, I mean, you know, guitar is giving that way too. Repetition is to be there, getting that stuff right, playing it slowly, playing fast, and all that. Yeah, I mean, definitely. I definitely like to. One way that I learned best is just by trying it, by doing it first, and then figuring out whether it works. I know some people who work that way.
Oh, you know why, right?
Go Mustangs. Right. Learn by doing. So that's actually funny that you bring that up, because that was a big reason why. I don't think I knew that much about myself going to school, but I knew that I connected with the maker attitude. And it's still something, even at work, as my profession has become more important to have these more strategic skills and be, you know, more PowerPointy than maybe it was when it started. I try to maintain that kind of maker attitude. So there's a lot you discover just by trying to do it and failing and experimenting that way. Discovering what works and then finding words for why that work patterns. So whether it's music or cooking or whatever, I think actually someone asked me about this once, and I kind of boiled it down to there's really three things you need to do, and if you're part of the rhyme, you have to appreciate it, imitate it, and then innovate it. So it's really this, you know, you spend some time with food, right? I mean, I think the way I got into food was going to San Francisco restaurants. I wasn't consciously looking for good restaurants. I was just going to them and discovering food that I had never tried before that I really liked. And then one day you realize, hey, I really want that thing, and you get fired up about trying to understand how it works and how it's made. So you make it, you imitate it. And when you imitate something long enough, you then start finding opportunities to blend ideas that you've never tried before. And that's how you innovate. So I think that's true if you're an athlete, if you're a musician, or programmer, or whatever. I think you see that pattern.
Oh yeah,
that might be the most profound statement on the 94 episodes of this podcast. You're really raising the bar.
No, that's great. That is a
that is a thing.
Very succinct analysis of that. I agree.
Well, you know, the way I hit that too was, even though I do have this attitude of just kind of trying it. With music, I was stuck in this rut of learning scales and improvising. I never actually knew any songs. Someone asked me, what do you think songs are? I don't know. I just know how to play these scales over these kinds of chord progressions. And it really bummed me out that I didn't know any songs. And when you talk to all your heroes or whatever, they all started by just listening to records. They'd slow down the record and just learn these solos note for note. And then eventually, since you can never really copy it exactly, you kind of develop your own voice. That's what I ended up doing in my own version of it. I use QuickTime, and I slow everything down in QuickTime. And I can hear all the notes in the solo that way, and I'll just loop it and repeat it over and over until, you know, it's just kind of ingrained with the melody. So yeah, you definitely need to invest some time in that imitation. As you know, even though you're eager to be original and different, you kind of need to pay some dues.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's also kind of following in with that is it's that kind of persistence of keeping on doing it even if you're not sure that's what you're supposed to do or whatever. I think just the action of actually doing it counts more than thinking about it, and especially more than talking about it. One of the things that I'm kind of guilty of recently is I'll have intentions about, you know, this or that, but really the only thing that gets me to actually do it is if I honestly, if I tweet it or I start talking about it to people to kind of hold me more accountable. And then when I start doing it, then it really counts. But like you can get almost the same satisfaction. The trap is you can get almost the same satisfaction of doing it as when you're telling people about it and they kind of go, yeah, that sounds good. And I'm like, yeah, I didn't even have to do it for it to feel good for me.
Yeah, it actually feels better. And it's funny that you mentioned that. I had the same realization just a couple of weeks ago that I'm almost going to put a quote or some kind of limit on the number of times I'm going to tell people I do something. And so when I catch myself wanting to say for the fourth time that, oh, I'm going to do this,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to keep to myself and I'm going to commit myself somehow to actually achieving that. But, you know, some way. So I'll do this all the time. But I'm going to have to put something and I'll say it over and over again. I think I'd rather just go to the point, okay, I'm going to sit down and find a way to make that thing. The songs and just kind of get down and do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tremendously satisfying to actually achieve some part of it that we've been talking about at that time. I feel like, I guess, kind of creeping into the design realm a bit, this is something that I struggle with. Is kind of like there's this, I don't know, it's like a category of design, but there's a lot of, you know, a lot of concept work you'll see. Certain big companies want to prove they still got skin in the game. And they'll release the annual video of, you know, our vision of the future with our products.
Right.
Right. And it's like, you know, for all the money you spent talking about that, could you, you know, try to make some of that? That would have been kind of cool, I think, you know. I mean, it's, yeah, it just depends on, you know, what you value, where your head's at as far as what feels right for that time. For me, I'd rather than doing it.
Well, I mean, not to be an apologist for that kind of thing, but...
and I've certainly done it myself, so I've been many a part of those.
I mean, I think part of it is, and part of me feels kind of like, I agree with you. I agree with you about, like, you know, do it instead of talking about doing it, and especially, you know, the kind of pie in the sky, like, this is how beautiful it could be kind of thing. But if you're not actually, you know, doing anything to back it up, you know, it colors that kind of thought a little bit. And so I think to some degree, I mean, they're putting that out there as a benchmark. And it just has to be something that's balanced. I mean, you can't, you know, be... if you're going to show something in a presentation, you have to at least have some... accountability for getting there at some point. I mean, I know what you're talking about because I know my company's really guilty of it. One more reason we don't say the names of our companies on the show.
Exactly.
Not that you couldn't, like, you know, do even the smallest of Google searches to figure it out. But in any case, one of the things that we have is there's kind of a yearly conference, and there's a keynote that's done at that yearly conference. And a lot of the stuff that goes into that keynote doesn't exist yet. It's like the, you know, yeah, this is on our radar and this is really, really soon. And, you know, in all honesty, it may not be. I mean, it might be something that someone is working on and it might be a working prototype, but sometimes it's, you know, it's the wizard and the man behind the curtain is just kind of making it look really pretty for the keynote. So
it's definitely a balancing act. I mean, you gotta, it should be far enough along that you can talk about it, but you have to show, you know, you have to keep people excited and make them realize that you're onto something really big. But you don't want it to be, if you can really get that something to be the moment before Steve Jobs came back to Apple, they were talking. Every year, we promise this Unix based OS is going to come out and change the world. Every year, they promise it. It's like, you know, I'm just kind of waiting for this company to just call it. And, I mean, yeah, we all thought it would do it, right? So, but it's there's definitely kind of this balancing out. To show that you're thinking about it, that you're working, it's a work in progress, but you know, not over promising for sure.
Yeah. You need both hat and cattle. Yeah. Don't want to be all hat, no cattle. Don't want to be all cattle and no hat.
Or what did it say? All sizzle and no stick.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
Oh, if it was all sizzle, I'd be so mad. Come on.
It's too much of a tease. But it's like, it comes down, for me, it comes down to this fundamental, this, you know, what makes innovation? And you could argue, a lot of people have definitions of what makes something innovative, but for me, the measure of something really innovative is how much the darn thing got copied.
Yeah.
So like, you remember around 2001, everything, every like industrial, every product that had been designed at that time was some shade of transparent blue. Right? And
yep.
Right. Everything had to look like an iMac. Now you had to see the inside of your vacuum cleaner. That was really important. So the thing is, like, no one's going to copy it if they don't see it, and no one's going to see it if it stays inside of a presentation.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to get out there. It can't just be disruptive. But you have to kind of the exercise of figuring how you're going to manufacture the thing, and how you're going to work out the details and preserve the integrity of the idea, and not just this execution that's on paper. And ideas, I mean, I certainly don't want to discount the effort of really good ideas and visualizing. That's a lot of work. But it's an extraordinarily, it's much more work to actually see those things do it. It's a high quality.
Definitely a thing.
Definitely a thing.
Cool. So what else is a thing? What else is a thing? Oh, I know what we actually schemed about this a little bit. So what are you drinking?
Oh, I'm almost at the end of it, actually. I'm doing really good here. I'm finishing up a Sazerac.
Very nice.
Oh, one of my favorite cocktails.
It's the official, or I don't know if it's the official, but it's the New Orleans cocktail.
It's right. The not tourist drink from New Orleans.
Yes. So beware of hurricanes.
Oh, yeah. In more ways than one. In
more ways than one. That was really bad. My apologies.
No, I went there. It was my fault. It was my fault.
I was there. I don't know, I feel like I have this habit for maybe disaster following me. I was there a year before Katrina.
Oh, wow.
And not as famous an event. I was in New Zealand the year before the Christchurch. Well, all these things that we saw there are falling apart. So, yeah, I'm trying to be very careful about where I go next.
Yeah, let me know where you're going.
Yes, I will let you know.
Avoid it for a year or so.
But, yeah, much, much love to those places. I went back to New Orleans. We did a fun little trip there a couple years ago. It was sort of a pilgrimage for soul music and jazz and that sort of thing. We started in New Orleans. So that in a bit, we went to the Roosevelt and the Sazerac at the Roosevelt.
So if you're drinking a Sazerac, what are you drinking, Alan?
Oh, yes, we got to get on to that. What are we drinking?
I'm boring. I have a neat Four Roses single barrel.
What? Well, I'm representing America, and I'm having a Silver Bullet.
That was actually, yeah, that was, I was going to say Bud Light, but was that close? I guess it's close enough.
Yeah, it was the coldest beer in my fridge, and so I am drinking it.
The mountains were blue, everybody's happy.
The mountains were blue.
Oh my gosh.
I thought
cold,
that was...
So you have the cold activated can.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Excellent. It's just the super cold activated can or the two bars?
No, just the regular. Actually, this is the special edition summer can.
Okay.
So does it, like, start melting if it gets above the wrong temperature, or what does it look like?
I don't know. I do feel bad, though, that I'm drinking this, and I've got a Bear Republic Stout sitting in a bag. It would be so much better, but is not cold.
Is that from the trip to Healdsburg last podcast?
No, this was another acquisition. I'm local. I can get it whenever I want.
Excellent. Cool. We had a lot of fun. This 40 minutes just flew by. Again? Emilio, thank you for being on. It's great to finally have you on. I mean, so for all the listeners that that are out there, I think it was hilarious that I met Emilio at dinner once, and he introduced me to someone as, "Oh, this is Alan. He has a podcast." That was my introduction. I'm the happiest boy ever.
I'm glad I could make it.
Kate, well, is there anything?
The circle is complete.
Yeah, is there anything that you're promoting or you want people to see, or how do people find you on the internet?
If you want to, wherever.
If I want to.
Right.
Yeah, that's key.
Yeah, I would just check the Googles, you know. Yeah. Is that a thing, the Googles yet?
Not the Google Pluses, anyway.
Not the Google Pluses, not so good these days. Some organizational changes. But yes, ePosse on Twitter. That's probably about as good as I get online.
And recently public now, right? Your Twitter was locked down. At least until a few weeks ago, or
it's all those controversial ideas and bad humor.
Well, prepare for a surge of literally dozens of people to your Twitter feed.
Excellent. It's really I think I'm gonna have to step up the Twitter quality now.
Oh well, don't do that on our account, please.
No, I mean mine's barely a Twitter feed. It's mostly a retweet feed.
That's still a thing. That's engagement. It works. Twitter works. Wants that. Yeah.
I need to do better at that. I'm a little bit more. I'm kind of into the original programming.
I think of myself as a curator of Twitter. Said the pretentious douchebag.
Excellent. Well, cool. Emilio, again, thank you for being on. Brendan... we're doing well. We're still kind of rolling along. We have to probably figure out a little bit more about what we're gonna do when we hit 100. But
that sounds like a future Brendan problem. I'll leave it to him.
Okay, good enough.
Thank you for coming on, Emilio. It's been most excellent.
Thank you for having me. Great talking to you.
Come back anytime.
All right.
All right. See you later, Brendan.
Till next time, Alan.